Right, Reverend Monsignori, Reverend Fathers, and all my dear brother and sister legionaries, this is a day of great joy for me, because your 25th anniversary coincides with the 25th anniversary of my ordination to the priesthood, and my whole priestly life has been intertwined by my Legion of Mary membership, and if I am, as I am, a very happy priest today, it is because I have shared the joys, the difficulties, and the hope of the Legion of Mary members, my extension of my priesthood. If I'm here today, it's, I suppose, because of the inspiration, wise or crazy, of Bill Pefley, the persistent letter writing of Gertrude Corrigan, who doesn't easily take no for an answer, and in a very special way, the very fact that Monsignor Moss sent his intermediate legionaries to Iceland to inaugurate and begin the whole mission of the conversion of Iceland. Were it not for those young teenagers who came on that venturesome, crazy, fantastic, beautiful mission from the shores of the USA, I probably would not be in Iceland today. Therefore, could I have said no? Most of all, of course, my greatest joy is to be the guest of Monsignor Falls, who for me epitomizes everything the Legion of Mary stands for. I should begin by saying it's a long way to Tipperary, or maybe I should sing it because I'm from Tipperary. Born, bred, and reared in Tipperary. It's just that I have a little summer house in Iceland. Well, you know, just before leaving Ireland for my last trip to Iceland, I was having a little chat one morning with Brother Frank Duff, and he was reminiscing at the age of 91, and I was telling him about my coming, of course, and he was talking about how difficult his life had been. It had so many crosses. And I said to him, Brother Duff, what has been your biggest cross in life? And he said, without any hesitation, opposition to the Legion of Mary. And when I came in here yesterday and the day before, and especially today, I said to myself, what a pity Brother Frank Duff isn't here, because that's one marvelous cross taken from his shoulders. He would have seen how well worthwhile it all was. I wish to speak to you particularly not only about the marvelous 25 years you have had, and in this I congratulate you and wish you all the joys from the depths of my heart, but I talk to you more particularly about the future, because the conversion of the world is in your hands. I don't have to tell you, or maybe I should, that you are one of the strongest Senatus legion bodies in the world. Therefore, if you do not undertake some marvelous, vast spiritual apostolate to the whole world, it means Our Lady is going to be very disappointed, because where else can it come from, if not from you? Therefore, your plans must be big, your hearts must be enlarged, your faith must be desperate. You have to forget about the word impossible or difficulties. This is a matter of life or death for many people. On the day of the Golden Jubilee celebration in Dublin some years ago, Frank Duff got a letter from a little old lady, and he showed it to me. It was a beautiful letter, and she said, I wish to congratulate you, Mr. Duff. You may remember that I was at the very first meeting. She was then one of the surviving members. How marvelous it is to look back and see the Legion throughout the whole world. Little did I think, how could we have guessed that such marvelous things would happen? Well, marvelous things have happened. My dear legionary, I am optimistic, and I'm sure the concilium is optimistic, that your numbers will not only persevere, but will multiply and spread into vast numbers. I was talking to some group of officers recently here, and I suggested how you might take a yardstick for the number of presidia you require in a parish, at least for a beginning. Just imagine a small corner of your parish, perhaps take a map, write it down before your eyes so you can see it clearly. There are non-Catholics in just that little corner. There are Catholics who need to be brought into the apostolate. There are lapsed Catholics. There are young people who need some marvelous inspiration. There are problem cases, drug addicts, alcoholics. You would need at least one senior presidium, one junior presidium, and one intermediate presidium just for those few roles. Which means that before we can confidently state that the Legion of Mary is established in a parish, you would have to have a minimum of 10 presidia, at least for a start. I do not suggest for one moment anything here that I have not seen in action in some place or other. Of course there will be plenty of difficulties, but it has been done, it can be done. If you are very happy this evening and you feel like going home, and telling your fellow legionaries, perhaps there are 14 of you, why not go in instead and say, brothers or sisters, I'm going to say goodbye because two of you or four of you are going to start your new presidium in another corner of the parish. And then you send out four, perhaps two experienced and two of the newer members, making sure that the whole process is supervised by your local governing body. And then, in that way, you help them to build up a new presidium in a new area. Likewise, there's a greater incentive and an urgency for recruiting. You don't have to tell me about the difficulties of recruiting. I have experienced it. And there's only one answer, an extraordinary urgency of life or death, whether or not we believe in the conversion of the world. If there's an urgency of faith, there are no insurmountable obstacles that cannot be dealt with. And therefore I suggested to the particular group I was talking with that the presidium should aim at splitting or multiplying itself approximately once every 6 weeks. So that if now you have perhaps one or two presidia, that soon you have a vast army of them. And this would include, of course, a vast number of teenage legionaries. So I'll speak a little about those in a moment. What a marvelous thing for me to hear Al, and my goodness, was I inspired. I just made one suggestion afterwards to Monsignor Falls, and that was that that tape must be in the hands of the Cardinal and must be circulated throughout the whole of the United States of America. And I was... was I proud that when I, in future, will be playing that tape and I'll be telling people, you know, he's a friend of mine. My goodness, will I be proud. But to hear him particularly talking about the priorities, the real works, of course, works of service and marvelous works, they're first-class works. It's just that Frank Duff was pointing out that for legionaries, there are different priorities, and what might be a first-class work, for example, may be able to be done by other organizations. It would not be a neglect of them. It could be marvelous work for juniors. I mean juniors under 14 years of age. Because, of course, as you know from the handbook, juniors or intermediates over 16 may not do junior work. You probably are well aware of what is in your Legion handbook. Now, you know, one of the most vital aspects, or perhaps one of the most marvelous books you could read is a book called Miracles on Tap by Mr. Frank Duff. Because there is no mention of difficulties or impossibilities except in the context of miracles. Of course, if you set out and begin to look around for the difficulties and the impossibilities, you might as well leave the Legion of Mary. It's precisely because there is no other organization in the world prepared to tackle the impossibilities or prepared to do the crazy things that this work has been entrusted by the Holy Spirit and the Blessed Virgin Mary to the Legion. Because there, the prime faith of our Blessed Lady is our model. Nothing is impossible with God. And therefore, we can read and reread in the Bible stories that there were some places Jesus did not work miracles because of their unbelief. Even Peter was slow to believe and said to our Lord, "Don't go to Jerusalem. There's a cross waiting for you there." You know what Jesus said? "Get behind me, Satan." I hope and I believe there are no legionaries among us here today who are afraid of the cross, which is a necessary part of the Christian life. And later on, little by little, the apostles got more courage and more faith. And when Jesus said, "Put down your nets into the deep," they saw nothing. But they did precisely that, and they drew a multitude of fish. Not just "let down your nets," but "deep down into the deep." Then, of course, if we talk about the crazy things, I was so glad that Brother Jimmy Cummins mentioned a thing like the Pognatio Pro Christo and the Incile Maria. You know, we desperately need Incile Maria in Iceland. Just to define the word for you, an Incile Maria means a person who gives up his or her job or gets leave of absence for perhaps 12 months and goes and does legion work in a missionary country. Now, unless we have more Incile in Iceland, there will be no mission. Perhaps I'll tell you a little about Iceland as comes to pass. Mind you, the weather's not so bad. Not as bad as the name would seem to indicate. It gets a little cool in winter, sometimes 20 degrees below zero. But in general, not too bad. You can put on warm coats. We have boiling hot springs. The houses are well heated. And there's even consolation in the snow. I have a little house in the northern part of Iceland on the north coast. We don't have a refrigerator there, but if we have spare meat or fish or milk, we just dig a little hole in the back garden in the snow, put in your meat and fish, the best deep freeze in the world, and all for free. But in general, the climate is not at all an unbearable climate. It's just one of the little inconveniences of a missionary country. There are 250,000 people in Iceland. About 1,000 of them are baptized Catholics. But very few of those Catholics are Catholics in our sense, through no fault of their own, because there are so few priests. Perhaps two or three active priests, some invalid priests, and a few on loan. And therefore, the bishop, Bishop Freehan, has more or less entrusted the conversion of Iceland to the Legion of Mary and the Incile Maria. And I'm proud to be able to tell you that of the first four Incile Maria who came to Iceland, two of them are from the United States. Ivy Tominick, who's now an extension worker down in Florida, and Francis Connolly, who has just returned to give another year service in the north of Iceland. Their mission, of course, is difficult because there is very little religion of any kind. They have to talk to people on the street, parks, houses. Sometimes it goes well and sometimes not so well. I remember two legionaries who were getting on marvelously one night, but they were slowed up a little in their tracks when they put on their best smile, knocked at the door, and this big man opened it, and he looked at them solemnly, and they said, "Well, we're Catholics." And he says, "That's your worry, chum." Bang. So the mission is a little bit unpredictable at times, but nevertheless, it does bring its consolation. But I particularly mention Iceland for two reasons. I would love to tell you all about Iceland, but you would be here all day and all night. The two things I wish to tell you are, we need prayer and sacrifice intensely for Iceland. We had one man, a man called Hilmer, who was thinking of becoming a Catholic. But he kept coming to the talks week after week, month after month. He liked them. But he got so settled, he decided he didn't need to become a Catholic. We couldn't push him, and yet we were trying to get the Holy Spirit to push him. Nothing great was happening. I wrote to a friend of mine in Ireland, and I said, "Do something about Hilmer." And he wrote back, and he said, "I sure will." And he told me he had recruited 11 men to do a holy hour before the Blessed Sacrament every day for Hilmer. I knew Hilmer didn't stand a chance after that. And he didn't. And some months later, Hilmer came and he said, "Well, you know, funny thing is, Father, I've decided to be a Catholic." And I was going to say, "Well, it isn't a bit funny," but I was so pleased. Therefore, we don't ask people to just say one little Hail Mary to the Mother of God. We ask them to do big things. I think it's a desperate situation. It's a terribly urgent situation. And it could be the key to the whole Scandinavian country, because there are marvelous possibilities. And the second reason I mention it is because we want you to volunteer. Now, don't you, all of you come together, but at least think about it, talk about it, talk to your fellow legionaries, just to give up your year and come to Iceland and work for the mission. Of course, this has its little consolations. For example, there are little by little, there's a little trickle of conversions coming in. And just before the summer holidays, I remembered our legionaries who had trucked through the snow and ice for a whole winter visiting a little Lutheran girl. And I wondered, you know, is it a bit crazy, even for legionaries? And it seemed so hopeless. And we had so many non-Catholics nearer our doorstep. But they went 10 miles to this little girl. Anyway, the Lord gave his answer. Just before the summer, I received the mother and the little girl into the church. And just one tiny remark the girl said to me that night, a little girl called Catherine, aged 10, she came over to me shyly when I was on my own, and she said, "Father, I must tell you, I'm very happy tonight." Of course, I knew it, but it was the way she said it. And I knew that that girl would always be a marvelously happy little girl. Perhaps my biggest consolation isn't just this little trickle, because this trickle of conversions has begun to grow into a stream, and I know by the grace of God it will develop into a torrent of conversions. There will be mighty things happening by the grace of God and the help of legionaries. But for me, perhaps the greatest consolation is the inspiration given to me by the Inkele Maria. We had 10 of them last year, from Ireland, America, England and Scotland. The oldest is a nun, incidentally, aged, who came to Iceland at the age of 80 and a half to begin her Icelandic mission. She's now 83, and at this moment trudging the streets of Reykjavik, knocking at doors, smiling and saying, "May we speak to you about the Catholic Church?" and so on. And then, of course, there are all ages down to the youngest. We call her the baby. Her name is Pauline, and she's just 18 years of age. She decided when she left school, before doing anything, she'd give her first year to the missions and leave the rest in the hands of Our Blessed Lady. And then, you know, at night I have a little cellar under my house. I built some rooms underneath, and we have three small little rooms, and some of the legionaries stay there at times. We also have a little chapel down there in the cellar. And every night they come together before they retire for bed, and maybe it's dark outside, maybe it's snowing, and I sometimes feel a little sorry for the legionaries. You know, it can be lonesome. They're far from home, they miss the companionship, and then we sing the night prayer from the breviary and the Salve Regina. And I never in my life appreciated the Hail Holy Queen prayer song until I went to Iceland, when I see the older ones and the younger ones just singing their hearts out to Our Lady, our sweetness and our hope. And I say, "Oh God," I don't say it out loud because I'm very careful not to give a swelled head to those legionaries. I hope they never get this tape. But I say, "Lord, thank you for sending me this little Pauline and the not so young and the not so legionaries who are with her in Iceland." Now, perhaps, as I mentioned the Salve Regina, I should say at this stage, I think, that for me, the greatest joy of this particular Congress or conference was the emphasis on the true devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary. Not just the marvelous talks given on true devotion today, the inspiring words of the legionaries, but the fact that all the comments or the whole trend of the Congress is obviously built around Our Lady. That she's not just the end, something you reach at the end of Legion membership, but she's the beginning point. And therefore, how can I blame myself for almost shedding tears of joy that you have discovered this marvelous true devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary? You know, she's going to be your guarantee for the future, this true devotion. Your strength for your difficulties. There will be many. If you are ambitious for the conversion of the world, you must wish to have them. She will be the key to your full possession of the Holy Spirit. She will be and is, of course, the secret of holiness, and most certainly the secret of power over souls. Those of you who have met Brother Frank Duff know his extraordinary influence or power over souls. I don't have to tell you where he gets that power, that extraordinary influence. I remember one occasion he was telling me about his own mother, and he was a young boy at the time, and she was taking him along to the doctor, and she stooped down to him as they were walking, and she said, "You know, Frankie, I feel so sorry for you. I would far prefer to sit in the doctor's chair today than to have to watch you go through this little pain." And the words went through him like a dagger. The love of his mother for him. I often thought afterwards how much it must have influenced his understanding of what a mother's love meant from the Blessed Virgin Mary. I don't have to give you a sermon on our Blessed Lady. That has been done so beautifully. But just occasionally, try to make it more intimate than maybe we have done in former years. You know who she is. She's a queen. She's an immaculate one. The Blessed Virgin herself. The woman of the smile. Just to try and stay close to her, to live this moment, to remain united to her every moment of your day and of your night. And in case you ever hesitate about taking on the true devotion or think, well, you're not ready or you'll have to make a long preparation, maybe you remember that Father Aidan McGrath told you some years ago that in China they started to take on the true devotion at the age of 12 years of age. I wish to say a word about Father McGrath, not because of his marvelous work, but because of the inspiration that he gave me and that he undoubtedly gives by the little things I relate from him. I worked with him in England for a number of years. I used to bring him out particularly to talk to my intermediates. And I have hardly ever, in any part of the world, given a talk without saying a few words about China. Because Pope Pius XII said that this is the most glorious history of the Church in our modern generation. And yet there are teachers of Church history and other kinds of history who allow children to grow up and do not tell them about the most marvelous chapter of Church history in our time. Therefore, in case some of you have missed that, I will say a few words to you about it. Briefly, he was delegated from the Vatican to start the Legion of Mary in China. The communists hated the Legion of Mary for two reasons. One was that woman, as they called the Blessed Virgin Mary. And secondly, they did not like Catholics to be active. If people just went to Mass on Sundays and prayed and kept quiet, communists were not afraid of that. But if people went out talking about God and our Blessed Lady and baptizing and teaching and visiting, communists knew that the communism could never spread where the Legion of Mary was strong. And so they put him under threat, but he persisted and he started the Legion of Mary, and very soon it mushroomed and spread throughout many parts of China, particularly among the university students in Shanghai. And then the persecution began, the crunch came, and the communists eventually said, "Leave the Legion of Mary or you go to jail." Two young girls, two sisters, were approached one day, 13 and a half and 14 and a half years of age. And the soldier said to them, "We give you 24 hours to leave the Legion of Mary, or else." And they came back and knocked at the door 24 hours later. The little girls had made up bundles of food and were ready to march to prison. That's the sort of thing that we have to think about for the future of the Church. The inspiration, the example of what power Our Lady can give those who have undertaken the true devotion. There was a little girl called Noel Wong, 18 years old, president of a junior presidium. She was constantly being watched. And what did she do? Got her junior members, 12 and 13 years old, to march down through the streets, reading out loud from their St. Matthew Gospel, Blessed are you when they shall persecute you in my name. Be glad and rejoice, because your reward will be great in heaven. They were so young, of course, the communists couldn't really put them in prison. But sooner or later, of course, they would catch Noelle, and they did. She had planned to become a Carmelite nun, but she never got the opportunity. She was placed in solitary confinement in a cell, and to this day, Noelle Wong is in jail in China. After all those years, she could walk out a free girl in the morning if only she would renounce her Legion membership. That's what it costs her. She has her convent Carmelite cell, if you like, but no beads, just the simple fingers God gave her to count her rosary beads, and the memory and satisfaction of knowing that you're saying this chain prayer in the best sense, the catena. You know what catena means? I would hate to be the legionary that would break that link in Our Lady's chain around the world, whether it's for active or auxiliary members. She has that joy, your prayer, your catena every day. Then there was the most extraordinary letter, I suppose, ever written in modern history. When the junior presidium had a letter from the bishop saying, I'm afraid we have to close you down, because I know what would happen, you would end up in jail, and I don't want that to happen, so leave the Legion of Mary, perhaps later we may let you rejoin. They were only 12, 13 and 14 years old, boys and girls. They were bitterly disappointed. And they wrote this famous letter to the bishop. Dear bishop, we will follow you wherever you go. They knew, of course, he would be killed. There can be no compromise in an age of persecution. That was all. And then each one of the boys and girls signed his or her name underneath that little message. But what gave the bishop the great shock was that that letter was written in blood. They cut their hands and wrote the message in their own blood, letting him see, we would prefer, bishop, to die as masters than to have to abandon working for Our Lady in her blessed Legion. And the bishop was big-hearted enough to write back, and he said, may God bless you. I'm proud of you, my young people. You may stay in the Legion of Mary, and I will pray for you every day at my mass. And he did, until his martyrdom some months later. I don't have to tell you where those young legionaries are today. Then the crush came on, and eventually the communists had to face one thing. Either they had to kill the Legion, or else abandon the communist domination of China. And so they sent out words to all the schools, factories, universities. We just give you a couple of weeks to make your decision. The Legion of Mary or death. Imagine coming out from your factory or your shop or your kitchen or your school and seeing these big placards which they had up. They had got all the names of the roll from the roll book. Active and auxiliaries. The communists hated the auxiliaries too because of what they stood for, and the backing up machinery for the army in the front of the battle. And then seeing your name, just visualize it, whatever your name may be, in broad print, and after it, the date of your execution. And all you had to do, if you wished to cancel your execution 2 weeks later, was to cross off your name. But of course, it implied that you were crossing off your name from the Legion of Mary roll book. Well, you know what happened. The legionaries refused to cross off their names, and they marched gallantly to their deaths. They didn't want to die. Nobody wants to die. But they preferred their religion. They knew what real life meant, the supernatural life of heaven, and they made that supreme sacrifice. The communists made one terrible mistake. They broadcast the execution over the city of Shanghai on loudspeakers, feeling that this would frighten off any other people who might be so foolish as to think they could get away with Legion membership. And then, for the first time, many of the casual Catholics, and the fairly good and maybe the not so good, sat up and began to realize what religion and the Legion of Mary stood for and what it was all about. And they flocked in large numbers to become Legion of Mary members, even if it meant martyrs. The communists saw their mistake. They couldn't keep killing them. They just rounded up the 10,000 legionaries and put them in prison. We're hoping, of course, that maybe with the new climate in China, some of them will be soon released. But for God's sake, remember, they're your brothers and your sisters. Pray for them. You know now why I take Father Aidan McGrath to visit the intermediate. I use the word intermediate, it really means a junior of the older age bracket, 14 to 18 years of age. Because I know that in spite of the difficulty of getting young people do and can rally to the churches fighting for souls. And this is why I'm so delighted to have the opportunity to make this appeal today. I've met some of your intermediates. My goodness, what a joy it was for me to meet them. And I hope they will multiply by getting on their bicycles and spreading all over the United States of America. And of course, I should tell you that the works we give intermediates here, perhaps I speak more from my experience of London, where we had the same difficulties of recruiting. And yet, because we gave them the toughest, most difficult works, we got four intermediate presidia going in a smallish parish in a comparatively short time. Their work, the conversion of the non-Catholics, just knocking at doors, inviting people to become Catholics, and so on. And incidentally, of course, when I talk about invitation, I should tell you that in Iceland, we made one big mistake our first year. We met people, introduced them to the Catholic religion, got them interested, but we stopped short of giving them the invitation. And then we decided we're working in too human a fashion. We must rise above ourselves, make acts of faith and do something crazy and demand God's intervention. So one night we said, all of us will go out this very night and every person we meet, we will simply give them an invitation to become a Catholic. Of course it was crazy because we gave them no explanations, no introductions, apart from the usual courtesies. But when we came back to report, two people that very night said, yes, I will be pleased to take up your invitation, after a year's fruitless working in a desert land. We learned our lesson, and therefore ever since that time we have changed our whole policy. So now we're not surprised that the little trickle of conversions has grown into a stream and will in time become a torrent. And that's why you must realize the potential, the power, the untapped source of energy in these young teenage people, not just to go by teenage appearance. I was a teenager, so were you. We maybe looked odd, we spoke odd, we sang odd, but there was great stuff underneath the surface, and you have to plunge deep and find it, and then send them out not only to bring people into the church but to give the instructions. One of my intermediate presidia instructed 11 non-Catholics and brought them into the church themselves. I simply finished off the job by doing the reception and supervising and maybe to some extent training the intermediates. Likewise, send them in to talk to schools. I was telling some little group yesterday that we had a big convent and a huge number of girls in it, but no great interest from the nuns in that particular place. And the boy said, well, Father, you can go in. And I said, well, not me. And they said, okay, the girls can go in. But the girls said, Father, the boy's a bad psychologist. If you want to influence nuns, send in the boys. And that's exactly what happened. One Thursday morning, two boys knocked at the convent door. Please, may we see the Reverend Mother. She came down. Please, Reverend Mother, may we speak to your community of nuns about the Legion of Mary. I beg your pardon, she said. But she gave them permission, and they spoke to 37 nuns on a given day the following week. Of course, they were helped a little by discussion at the presidium meeting on what they might say and just what the Legion means to me. And the two of them spoke like that for many, many, many minutes, perhaps an hour or two, and the nuns asked many questions. The following morning, I said Mass as usual, but unlike usual, I had four nuns in to breakfast with me, telling me the marvellous thing this Legion of Mary was. I'd been telling them for 2 years, and they didn't listen to me. Therefore, for goodness sake, use the young people. Send them into the pulpit. You know that you can get permission from your bishop and your parish priest to have them speak for a few moments after Mass to their fellow teenagers. If you don't do it, I tell you what's happening. The sects, the Mormons, the Jehovah's Witnesses, they're taking away the interest of young people. They're giving them a challenge, and therefore some young people just think the Catholic Church is a bore. Never let that be said. Never let it be said that you didn't give them an opportunity to see the real church. And incidentally, every time an intermediate in London reached the age of 18, we promptly made her a president of a new presidium. Unfortunately, she didn't qualify before the age of 18. But I tell you, by that time, she would have as much experience, and often much more, than many legionaries who were 30, 40 years in the Legion of Mary, because they would be on peregrinatio, on mission work, conversion work, and so on. So therefore, I know, because I have worked among some teenagers in the west coast of the USA, I know what is available in your Senatus area. I therefore don't talk to you about the difficulties. You know all about those. In fact, the difficulties depends on what you're really aiming at. You know, of course, the Legion of Mary isn't a kindergarten. It's not a joke. It's an army. An army fighting against the evil forces of the world. And therefore you must present it as an army. We're looking for a revolution, a spiritual revolution among the young and the not so young in the world of today. We're talking about sainthood. That's what we have to present to the young people. Masterdom if needs be, but all based on the true devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary. Because where did the Chinese legionaries get their courage? I asked Father Aidan McGrath. It was not human. He said they got it from the Blessed Virgin Mary when they undertook the Montfort's true devotion. So therefore, let's be daring, like those intermediates who went to Iceland from the USA. Let's really put the conversion of the world to the young legionaries of our own countries. I should say a word to you about Russia, because if I don't, I will be murdered by some people who invited me here. One of the early visits to Russia reminds me of the doorman in a hotel in Russia where we stayed. There were 24 of us. We were a little bit afraid at that time. We didn't know what was before us. And when we saw this huge doorman with his peaked cap, and he looked so stern, he never saluted us. But he looked at us rather suspiciously, and every time I walked out the door, I was dressed as a priest, of course. He looked me up and down, refused to look me in the face, opened the door and closed it after me, and we went out to do our work on the streets and the parks. And I said to myself, ha-ha, he's one of them. I'll keep my distance. But he didn't interfere with us. And he was quite courteous. So we walked away on the streets of Russia, talking particularly to the age group between 16 and 30, because they had some little bit of English. Also, these were either university students, university graduates, teachers, or professors. They were, and are, of course, the future of the Russian Empire. Well, some of the people from the United States, including some here present, have been on some of those missions. And I hope maybe you get an opportunity to hear fuller stories about it. But they will tell you of the marvels of welcome that we get from the people who are just starving for a knowledge of God. My goodness, what a funny idea I myself had about the Russian people. And then you meet them, so gentle, so courteous. You talk to them about God. Not all of them, of course, immediately believe you. Most of the young people don't know anything about God. That's the propagandist machine. All the old people, of course, believe, because the old system of persecution was an utter failure. I think it's true to say that most of the elderly people believe in God. But just to talk, and then you end up and they say, please, can we hear more about this tomorrow? Because there are 260 million people in Russia. There are only two Catholic priests. Therefore, if the Iron Curtain went up tomorrow morning and we did get an opportunity of going in large numbers to live, are we ready? You see now why I am talking to you not about only the conversion of all the United States, but the conversion of the world. Even the little things, it's impossible to describe them. I was walking down a street. I didn't know very much Russian at that time. I met a lady and I talked to her as best I could in sign language about God, and I had a few little words of Russian, she had a few words of English. Oh, she was so happy. She was so thrilled. She had a little girl by the hand, aged maybe 5 or 6. When I parted, she said in her own little way, "Thank you so much for what you gave me. It cost me so little to give it, but it meant so much." And then she gave me a little reward. It broke my heart to take it, but I took it. It was a little bag, paper bag of 5 sticky sweets that she was bringing home for the youngster. I hated taking the candy from the child's mouth, but I knew it meant so much to that woman, and that someday that child would appreciate where her lovely 5 sticky sweets went, that I took it to gratify the joy and the gratitude of that poor woman. Sometimes, of course, strange things happened. I think it was maybe one of the first years I was in a hotel. I was a little bit lost. I was on a landing. The next thing I saw, this huge lady. Oh, she was huge in all directions, believe me. She was vast. And she looked at me, recognizing apparently that I was a priest. So I thought, maybe I will chance a little approach here. So usually we didn't talk about religion in the hotels. And next thing anyway, I smiled at her and she gave me a vast beaming smile. And then she gave me the sign. Crossed fingers means I am a Christian. Oh, I hadn't a word of English, huh? Or at least I hadn't a word of Russian and she hadn't a word of English that year. But she was so happy, and I pulled out the only thing I had to give her, a little miraculous medal. And then, before I could dodge or duck, she threw her 2 big arms around me. And she gave me a hug, and I tell you, it was a crushing experience. So beware if you ever go to Russia. It's not from the places you think the danger comes, but from the most unexpected sources. There was a boy called Eugenio, and we got talking to him on the street. He was 19 years old, a lovely boy. And he saw that we were believers, and he said, "Can you come quietly to my home and talk to me there?" We went to his home, and he had some faith, but it needed a little bit of boosting. He hadn't met people who believed in God before. We talked to him and we prayed with him. And then he said, "May I give you something in return?" We weren't sure what he had in mind, but he went over to sit down at the piano to play. He was a beautiful pianist. And then he suddenly, before he put his hands on the keys, he stood up abruptly and he went over to the window and he closed it. And he came back and sat down and played Schubert's Ave Maria. And my goodness, did that prayer, played as it was by that young man, go through every fiber of my being. How sad that he had to close the window. One day we were on the street and we met a girl called Tanya. Oh, she was a beautiful brunette, 19 or 20. Looked about 24, but she wasn't. We talked to her about God. She had no belief, and yet it was one of the many cases where we saw an instant conversion. After perhaps a half an hour, not by arguing, we never allow anything like that in Perigonasia, but simply saying, "Please believe us. God does exist and God loves you. Please believe us." And she said, "I will believe you. I do believe you. Help me to know more about this God." And when we were parting, there was a lady with me, and I remember Tanya coming over and giving her a big hug, and I drew back a bit and put out my hand, and I got a lovely handshake. There was a man walking along a street down in the south one day. He stopped dead in the middle of the street, a big heavy man. And he listened, thought he's dreaming, but he wasn't dreaming. And he couldn't get it out of his ear, so he followed the sound that he heard. And he walked over to a place overlooking the beach, and he looked down and saw an amazing sight. A group of legionaries singing the Ave Maria. They sang many other things, and they were dancing, and thousands of people around. But in the midst was the Ave Maria, repeated every now and again. And the man sat down in the middle of the crowd, and he seemed like a man in a daze. And one of the legionaries came to me and said, "Father, go back and speak to him. There's something strange about him." And she tried to speak to him in English, but he hadn't English. And this, by this stage, I had some Russian. I went back, and I discreetly made a point of sitting beside the man. And I spoke to him first in English, then I spoke a little in Russian, and he was a little bit puzzled. And then I thought, is it possible? And I said, "Tu es sacerdos. Are you a priest?" And he answered me in Latin. He was a priest. Not dressed as a priest, he couldn't. And then he taught me about the paralyzing action of the Ave Maria, which had never been played or sung publicly in Russia since 1917. There was a boy called Paul, that wasn't his name at the time, a boy of 16, a fine big manly fellow. And he was approached, or I shouldn't say he was approached, because he took the first approach to ask the legionaries the time of day, making a sign. But it happened he had good English, and they soon talked to him about God. And they discovered a strange thing, and that was that he was in a state of puzzlement. Did God exist or not? He thought it was a possibility. But his only problem was that all his friends, all his school companions, all his teachers, everybody said, "There is no God." But one person whom he loved very much, his grandmother, said to him, "There is a God, whatever anybody tells you." And he loved his grandmother very much. And perhaps he was hoping against hope she was right. And he said straight to the legionaries, "Please tell me, is there a God?" They said, "Yes. Your grandmother is right. There is a God, and he loves you, and you will see him someday." And then he said, "Tell me more." And day after day, they instructed him. Until eventually he said, "I want to become a Catholic." They brought him to me, and I said, "You know that if you become a Catholic, life may be a little difficult for you." "I know that," he said. "I had to think about that. But I must do what I must do. Please make me a Catholic." We went off into a little forest, and I baptized him. One of the legionaries cut out from a white, clean handkerchief a little white cloth. We couldn't have all the ceremonies, but we had as much as we could have, including the little white cloth indicating the removal of all original sin, the baptismal water indicating not only the washing of sin, but a new life of the Holy Spirit in his soul, the little candle. A life of flame. It must have been a strange sight in the forest now that I think of it. And I said, by the way, we baptized him Paul because of the first great conversion, St. Paul. And then I said, "I don't know if it is possible to bring you Holy Communion because we were leaving early the following morning. But I said, I'll try. Will you be in this place?" He said, "I will try too. I cannot promise." And the following morning, we got up very early. I said a very early mass. I put an extra host into a little pyx, a little silver box. Two legionaries came with me. We didn't talk. We just prayed. And I can clearly remember my prayer of that morning. I knew there were many, many thousands of people throughout the world praying for us and for our mission. But this time my prayer was, "God, hear their prayer. And let Paul be there for us when we reach him." And God heard your prayer. And Paul was waiting for us. And I shall never forget that first Holy Communion. And when I had given him the Blessed Sacrament, a strange thing happened. The legionaries had instructed him about prayer, but had forgotten to tell him it is not necessary to say your prayers out loud. So before we could stop him, Paul began his thanksgiving. And he simply said, "Jesus, I'm so sorry. I didn't know you before. But thanks for coming. And if I never meet you again in this life, I look forward to meeting you in heaven." perhaps it was his last Holy Communion, because he lived 680 miles from one of those priests I told you about. If you happen to pass by a little flat in Dublin City, you may see framed in the wall a little white cloth, and on it embroidered, simple inscription, "Pray for Paul." But that is the story behind Paul. Just this year, I was in a train one day. There was a mother and a daughter, aged 18, and her name was Maria. And the daughter said to her mother, "Mamma, there's a Catholic priest." The mamma said, "Shh, Mamma, there's a Catholic priest." But eventually the mother turned to me and she said, "Thank you," because I moved over in the seat for her. And the end of the story was that they invited me to their house. And I began to talk, and the mother said, "Please don't speak." She had very little English. She ran off, brought back a writing pad. "Please write everything. We may never hear these things again. And when you're gone, my daughter will translate everything." And I had to write out the whole story of the Miraculous Medal, the 15 decades of the Rosary, the life of Christ. I was exhausted, but it was a labor of love. And then I had just a very beautiful rosary bead in my pocket, which I hadn't intended giving away. We don't usually use things like this so much, because we're extra careful in Russia. But how could I leave that little Maria, called after the Blessed Mother? They were believers. I gave her my rosary beads, and I taught her to say it. She knelt down on her knees. She burst into tears and kissed my hand, just because I gave her a simple blessing that we get every night, noon and morning, and don't realize it. When we were leaving Russia, the very first year, we came to the door with our bags packed, and I thought, well, it doesn't matter now what the big man at the door thinks, the doorman with his big cap and his big stern face. But strange to say, when I came to him, he didn't look so hostile. And in fact, he ventured up to make a little smile, but very discreetly. And he straightened himself up and he saluted and he said, "Jesus Christus Voskresenia," which means, "May Jesus Christ is risen from the dead." I realized then he had been a secret believer and praying for our mission on the street. We never exchanged one other word except that was his secret parting message. In other words, "Thank you for coming to Russia. And remember that there are some of us who still believe in God." And therefore, I pray like all of you that someday that boy Eugenio will be able to open his window and the Ave Maria will float out over the whole of Russia and eventually over the whole of the world. When I was in Africa some years ago, I was privileged to be in the same presbytery as Edel Quinn's spiritual director, Father Culligan. And he told me a very strange story, which has never appeared in print, and therefore I think it should be told to you. As you know, Edel Quinn was dying on her feet for many years, but she didn't die. Our Lady providentially kept her alive by the grace of God. But she was often at death's door, and on this occasion she was very, very close to death, very ill, and lying in a convent. The nuns were praying she wouldn't die. It would have been a marvelous privilege if she had died on their premises. But they'd miss her so much. And in the morning, a nun came up, tippy-toe, hoping the girl was still alive. And she came quietly into the room and listened to see if the girl was breathing. She was. Edel was breathing heavily. And the nun went to tippy-toe out quietly so as not to disturb her. But Edel heard her, and she said, "Sister." And Sister stopped dead in her tracks. And Edel said, "Sister, you thought I was going to die during the night, didn't you?" The poor nun could say nothing. And then Edel said, "Sister, our Blessed Lady has told me that I have 3 more years to work." We don't know exactly how she got the message. Not just 3 more years to live. Of course, it meant she'd have to live 3 years. But what excited the heart of Edel was this message from Our Lady: "Edel, you have 3 more years to work for me." And the thought, she wasn't worried about dying or living. She was prepared for God's will at any time. But the thought that she could have the privilege of working for the Blessed Mother of God for 3 more years. My God, what a privilege. and she lived exactly 3 years longer. And when she died, a priest came quickly and anointed her. And the hands that had served Our Lady so well had placed the statue so often on the little Legion altar, as you often do. The feet that had trampled the hot, dusty beats of Africa or the poor streets of Dublin. The feet that went after the sinner or the pagan. They were anointed for the last time and consecrated for her entry into heaven. And her lips that spoke so often of true devotion to the Blessed Virgin. And then the priest came and held up the little statue of the Immaculate Conception, which she always carried in her bag, a little white statue. You may have seen it in the Concilium office in Dublin. And under the gaze of that statue, Edel Quinn wafted her soul to heaven. My dear legionaries, do you realize your privilege in being members of the Legion of Mary? Not just the joy of having served Our Lady for 25 years, but your present membership and the flow of marvels of grace into your soul. It's not just the 25 years that have passed I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of the preparation that Our Lady has been making in your souls and in your parishes and in your children. You are being prepared for a great mission, and don't you ever forget it. Our Lady doesn't build without a great purpose in mind. On one occasion, Frank Duff came to these shores, and he got many wonderful tributes. But one priest said a lovely thing, and Frank Duff said it when he came back. It was the most beautiful thing that was said to him in America. The priest said, "I cannot call Mr. Duff the founder of the Legion of Mary because he would protest Our Lady as the founder. But I will call him the magnifier of Our Blessed Lady." You too are magnifiers of Our Blessed Lady. Therefore, you face the future with a marvelous challenge. You don't care about difficulties. That's what makes soldiers and makes officers and makes victories. Remember this. Our Blessed Lady has nobody but you. For God's sake, don't disappoint her. She's your mother. She's waiting for you with arms outstretched. The restlessness of the Holy Spirit is moving over the face of all Legion activity. You know, my final sentence is a little bit like the beginning. I told you about a letter that a little old lady wrote to Frank Duff. Now I must tell you about his reply.
She showed me the letter. He wrote back to her and he said, "I'm very pleased to hear from you. And of course I remember you well and all the things you say. But," he said, "you said one strange thing I didn't understand. You said, did we ever think it possible that such marvelous things could happen in those 50 years? Do you not remember," he said, "do you not remember that at that very first meeting we placed everything in the hands of Our Blessed Mother?" He said, "when you do that, when you place yourself in the hands of Our Lady 100%, don't ever be surprised at anything that will happen. Therefore, my dear legionaries, as I wish you joy in the future and congratulate you on the past and pray for a continued expansion of your plans and undoubted capacity to convert the whole world, let's all this evening, maybe as we kneel by our bedside, just say to Our Blessed Lady, 'Oh, thank you, Mary. I am all thine, my queen and my mother, and all that I have, all, everything is thine.'"